Podcast. My name is Sam Snelling. We are here for a brand new episode of Dive Cuts. With me, as always, is Matthew J. Harris, representing Indy. Matt, how are you?
I'm well. I'm plotting how we're going to direct the mob of Mizzou fans to invade some poor AP voter's Twitter mentions next.
Well, yeah, the new guy is apparently another Kansas grad. Who works for like a Atlanta television station, I guess.
Yeah. Which I find,
leave it to those KU grads to never stop sending Mizzou shade, even with their AP votes.
I don't know. I think they're out.
Like, I actually legitimately think like Jesse, like, I don't have a problem with his methodology. He sticks to it. And I appreciate that, even if it hurts some Mizzou fans' feelings. I like to try to, you know, take the effort to prove him wrong a bit. But, I mean,
most years, I think that's fine. Like, I don't think it's a bad... Like, I get the logic behind it. I've just watched enough AP voters that, like, out of 60-plus people, it's inevitable that somebody's gonna, you know, screw up, or somebody's gonna have a poll that's going to have weird stuff in it. Like, I don't necessarily think most... Like, most journalists I know who voted in the poll wanted to do a good job. You could disagree with their method, but it's 60 people with different criteria, so you're going to get some wonky outcomes some of the time. But I think most engage in it in good faith, and... Yeah. I mean...
I realistically don't think that like Jesse Newell was purposefully omitting Missouri. I think I made the argument essentially that his usage of the data was a little bit misapplied. You know, but like, I didn't really hold that against him. The other one seems a little bit suspect, though. I just don't know how, after what Missouri has done this year, how you could leave them completely off the ballot. I think a case could be made for them to be in, you know, like 20 to 25. Like, I think you can realistically make that case. But to leave them completely off the ballot at this point, you know, it's...
That's happened most of the time, it's just like, it's just an honest God screw up. Like, it really, like, you think that can't happen, but it does. And... like, I'm sure he'll correct it next week if Missouri wins this week. Like, I don't anticipate that there's going to be a long-running, like, effort to exclude Missouri from the poll. And I don't know. I
really don't worry about it that much.
Maybe it's from, like, watching guys do the poll every week. Like, I was offered the chance to do the poll once, and I was like, eh. I don't feel like doing it because it's really, really hard, and... like, I follow, like, I was paid to write about college basketball and follow it, but it's kind of a hassle, and I don't know if, like, the poll is the, like, I get it, it drives conversation, I get its utility in some ways to market the sport, but it's not 1937 anymore. You can watch every game now, you can see most results. We've got gobs of analytics, almost too many analytics now, by which to, like, measure and compare and analyze teams. Like, I'm not sure that 60 people across the country voting in a poll is the most productive way of, like, ordering teams. So I don't know. I tend to focus more on the net rankings, because that's what the committee's going to use, and, you know, use KenPom and Synergy. And that's pretty much how I have a yardstick for what quality teams are. But the poll and where teams wind up in them, it really has no bearing by the time March comes around. But hey, it drives conversation. It's driving our conversation right now. So it's doing its job.
Well, so changing attention a little bit, I'm you know, back after a week off. I want to say thanks to Josh for recording with you last week. Thought you guys did a good job. I appreciate you stepping in. Anyone that follows me on Twitter knows at this point that having a little bit of a health issue with the old doggo. So that is still ongoing. We are more at a point of, I guess, you know, trying to get certain things under control, certain numbers. So anybody that is super interested and wants to Google diseases that dogs get, you can start with leptospirosis, which is what we think kind of caused a lot of this for Arturo. Giardia is another one. Matt's familiar with Giardia. It's a fun thing for your dog to get. Yeah, so Giardia on top of leptospirosis is pretty awesome. But also, we're kind of thinking that this is all on top of an underlying autoimmune disease that we're still trying to kind of figure out. So it's been about 2 weeks, 2.5 weeks, something like that, since we've kind of been dealing with this. Arturo's really kind of been up and down. This weekend was honestly pretty brutal. I think Friday night, they put him on a blood pressure medicine that we think kind of almost gave him like an altitude sickness. Because that's kind of how he was acting. But it was kind of crazy. So I'm not operating on a sufficient amount of rest at this point. But I felt good enough that I thought it was time to return to the mic and do a pod. And plus, I really kind of wanted to talk about more good things that are happening in the peripheral, and that includes Missouri basketball. Matt, do you have any health related questions or for canines that you want me to answer before we move on?
No. I have a vet for that that I can call here, and I pay them probably too much money. So if I want to engage in that conversation, I'll call Downtown Veterinarian in Indianapolis, and they'll probably be glad to talk to me about
any issue. Well, yeah, the latest fun development is that he currently can't see because his blood pressure is too high. So people that are familiar with like blood pressure issues, you might know that humans can like lose sight if their blood pressure gets too high. It tends to be temporary. But yeah, that's a new fun thing. So every time he goes outside, you have to go outside with him and, you know, walk him around the yard and make sure he's not running into walls. No. So he's on blood pressure medicine, and we're hoping that kind of gets his sight back. He's eaten somewhat regularly now for 3 days in a row, so we're hoping that we can kind of get this under control, but it's still dicey.
And with all that, you still got study hall done this weekend. So,
yeah. I watched the entire first half. People may have noticed that there were no tweets from Rocket Nation until about halftime. I watched the first half on the floor. With Arturo, who had decided that he didn't like the bed that he was in, and he moved to a different bed. So I was just sitting next to him on the floor watching the game. And what a terrific... So this is like two games in a row where Missouri's just kind of come out of the gates and looked like just a phenomenal basketball team. Just, you know, gritting their teeth. Just fire in their eyes. Like, there was a determination against both South Carolina in the early going and against Tennessee on Saturday. So, and both games kind of went the same way. Like South Carolina sort of rebounded after a bit, but could never quite get over the hump. And then really the same thing happened with Tennessee. Like, they, and Tennessee is, I think it's also fair to say that, I mean, credit to Missouri. I think they took Tennessee out of a lot of stuff that they wanted to do. You give them credit for that. They were really physical with John Fulkerson, which I thought impacted his ability to kind of get going early. And that led to a lot of live ball turnovers. It led to a bit of a lopsided score early on. And then they were able to just sort of hold the Volunteers at arm's length, you know, through really through the, you know, the play of Xavier Pinson, who was really phenomenal. We've seen X kind of go off, Matt. I think it's clear that we know that, like, X, when he's going good, is as good as any guard in the league when he's playing his game, when he's making jump shots and he's making smart reads and stuff like that and finishing around the rim. I think that was as good of, if not, you know, the best offensive game that he's played. I think there was he did turn the ball over 5 times. And I think at least 2 of those were like where he's just got so much confidence that he was, I think of like the dump off that was like behind his head to Mitchell Smith, which, I mean, a nearly impossible pass to throw, but also more impossible to catch. You know, particularly for a post. And so, yeah, it didn't go well. But overall, I thought X was phenomenal. And it was nice, especially for Konzo Martin, who, you know, I think I even said something about in study hall about how he was kind of run out of Knoxville. It was really kind of fun to sort of see the post-game tweet from Mizzou Hoops about him yelling in the hallways after the game. It was just a nice sort of like cathartic moment.
Yeah, I think they had a good game plan in mind. I think they understood that without Jaden Springer there, Santiago Viscovi was going to be a primary ball handler there. So they were physical with.
And Matt, if you read the Tennessee preview, I believe we made note of the concerns about Viscovi and his ball security.
Yeah, we did. That's a long-standing issue. I think I looked at it. Their first, you know, without Jaden Springer, their turnover percentages jumped by like 10 percentage points. It's almost doubled. So, or more than doubled. So, I mean, credit to Missouri. I mean, they were physical with Fulkerson. You know, I think Vescovi's even banged up with like a hit pointer thing, so he wasn't at full strength, and Missouri was a little more physical on the ball early on than they usually are, especially in some ball screen situations. And they got live ball turnovers, and they capitalized on them, but, I mean, that's, it feels like if you looked at the entire, if you merge the stats from both these games, I'm pretty sure both teams, like the deciding factor is going to be turnovers and ball security. In the first game, Missouri was not very good with the rock, and in this one, Tennessee was not, you know, managing to keep a firm grip on the ball. And it staked them to an early lead. Second half, they got a couple timely runs to hold Tennessee off, and it's a fifth quad one win. You know, you don't apologize and. You know, for Tennessee not being at full strength, that's just how it goes. Injury luck is a factor, but I thought it was impressive how resilient they were. Like, I think everyone's going to look at the early, you know, first 10 minutes of the game and see how they bolted out of the stretch. I was more impressed in the second half because Tennessee changed up its ball screen coverage at halftime. Like, X, you know, had an okay second half, but I think they put Jordan James on him more, and instead of trying to, you know, apply more pressure or hard hedge, they just made sure that they had Eve Pons dropping back, you know, trying to contain him, and they had a little bit more length on the ball and a little bit more athleticism on the ball. But it was guys like Kobe Brown and Javon Pickett who helped carry them through. You know, Tennessee cuts the lead to 8, and it's, you know, Pickett and Brown, guys that, you know, you wouldn't normally associate with, you know, making key plays offensively, you know, who, you know, push the lead back out to 12 or 13 points. And Tennessee cut it down again around the 6-minute mark, And again, Missouri kind of managed to get a little 6-0 spurt and hold them off. And I think that's sort of, you know, you mentioned a couple weeks ago, coming into this season, you know, the question, one of the questions of many that we had was, you know, does this team have the mental makeup to close games like this? Can you go on the road and, you know, not only start fast, but you know Tennessee's good enough that once they started to, you know, settle down, once they were able to, you know, string some possessions together, you know, I think you and I both noted in the box score afterwards, you know, if you looked up and down this is a game that, you know, if not for turnovers, is a one possession basketball game. Like Tennessee, when it managed to, you know, value the ball and, you know, put possessions together, was playing well enough offensively in this game. This was not Missouri's, you know, best game defensively from a points per possession perspective, but, you know, Missouri executed well enough early. They were able to create some transition opportunities that took some pressure off their offense and sapped Tennessee of critical possessions that they would ultimately need. This was still a low possession game. You know, I think we wound up at like 64 or 66 possessions despite the early transition opportunities. And in the second half, Missouri got enough out of the half court and were able to still generate enough, you know, plays on the run to get out of Knoxville with a win. And, you know, we talked about, you know, have we seen this team's A game? And I think I told Josh last week, I still think Oregon's probably the closest we've come to seeing them at their apex. But, you know, they go on the road, they do what they need to do, they get a win. And, you know, at the end of the day, style points don't matter. They, you know, they got the result they needed. And, you know, last week was kind of a game, was what you wanted to see from a program that had had a little bit of a forced layoff, that had not looked real efficient, or, and I want to say, all that consistent for a couple of games, or four or five games in a row. And in the last two games, it seems like they've kind of steadied the ship a little bit. So, good result, but I think the longer term issue is, I think you've seen some resilience from this group, and that's a trait that you're going to need as we come down the stretch.
Yeah, and I think it's important to kind of note, like, yes, the shooting was a big key, you know, for Missouri. You know, they ended up winning by 9. You know, I think what were they, like, 9 of 22. Let me pull it up real quick. 8 of 19 from 3 for 42%. I was kind of looking back through, and I think there was one other game, and I think it was probably Oregon, where they hit 40% from 3. And this is just a team that has really struggled all year long to make threes. And if Mark Smith isn't hitting shots, or maybe, no, I think it was actually Oral Roberts, where they hit 40%. But if Mark Smith isn't hitting threes at a good clip, you know, then Missouri has really struggled. And we've seen, you know, Pinson, we've seen Drew Smith, you know, show the ability to knock down shots. I think the bigger thing that, I'm not a believer that Missouri needs to be a 40% shooting three-point team to be successful. Very clearly they've been successful this year without being that. But if you can, instead of being a 28 or 29 three-point shooting team, just be like a 33 or 34% three-point shooting team, then I think what you do is you really open up your ability to have a little bit more leeway in the half court, you know, and have, I guess, that buffer, you know, of just occasionally being able to count on, when somebody's taking that three-point shot, you know, that it, if it goes in, like, that can kind of energize the team. And I just feel like they've been scuffling for so long from deep that, you know, maybe this is something. And again, like, I don't expect them to come out and shoot 42% for the rest of the year, but if they can just shoot better, I think what it does is it turns them into a team, which I think, you know, we're still maybe slightly skeptical that they're going to end up in kind of like that 4-seed line or 3-seed line, wherever they're projected right now. maybe more like a 6-7. But if you're able to just shoot a slightly better 3-point percentage, I think this does, you know, become a team that you can see, reasonably see in that sort of 3-5 seed range.
Yeah. I think the goal is to get to 30%. Like, I'm just not optimistic that they're a team that, given the amount of time, the number of games that's left, and the number of shots they have to make to get 33%, if they can get to...
The total amount of, you know, by the end of the year.
I think if they can shoot 32%, so...
Like, from here on out.
Yeah, then that's better. I mean, that'll buy them an extra 3 or 4 points per game, which is going to ease the pressure that they feel having to, you know, either points that they lose through turnovers, or, you know, if they face teams that are legitimately able to kind of protect the paint and protect the rim. But it'll be interesting to see what the expectation levels are now, because it seems like things have yo-yoed. I mean, it feels like we're ramping back up again, you know, where, you know, Mizzou fans are salty because they're not in the top 10 with 5 quad 1 wins. And, you know, this is probably a good time to pivot. You know, and I look at this Auburn game on Tuesday and I think that's, you know, let's not get too vocal here. Because Sharif Cooper's taking a blowtorch to people recently. And Auburn is, with him in the lineup, is a substantially different, they're of a different order of magnitude. I don't think they're an SEC, you know, contender, but they go from a team that, you know, is an 0-4 squad that's kind of wandering the wilderness to one that, you know, would be hoping that, man, we should not have taken the voluntary postseason ban because we could be a bubble team with Cooper in the lineup. That road trip gets substantially dicier when you have a 5-star doing what Cooper's been doing over the past 4 or 5 games for them. So, you know, I'm this is probably, even when we were in the preseason, this game was probably honestly the most intriguing one for me on the schedule. So I've been sort of anxiously looking forward to this one because I literally have no clue how this one could go. I can see any scenario under the sun here. But it,
you can see a blowout on both sides. You can see a close game on both sides. I could see this game going in a kind of a similar way, like, you know, Missouri did to like Texas A&M, where it was a little close for a while, but then they just sort of put the stranglehold on them. I could see Auburn just kind of going nuts from 3-point range. I know, like, everybody is, and rightfully so, you know, concerned about Sharif Cooper. He's been phenomenal. He's played in 5 games. You know, Auburn started 0-3 in league play. Then Cooper came in and they nearly beat Alabama. Lost to Alabama on a game where I really kind of thought Auburn had a chance to win until Cooper, I think, tried to do a little too much. You know, he's a freshman playing his first game of the year against your school's big rival. And he made like 3 or 4 decisions in the last 2 minutes that I was just like, "Woof, that's a terrible shot. That's a bad pass." And I think he single-handedly kind of cost them that game down the stretch. But then they blasted Georgia. They beat Kentucky. They lost on the road narrowly to Arkansas, and then they went on the road to South Carolina and just absolutely beat the tar out of the Gamecocks. So, and South Carolina is like a team where I really thought they were a dark horse to me, a team, you know, who I really liked a lot of their guards. AJ Lawson, I still think, is a guy who has NBA potential. You know, not like an all-star or anything, but a guy who can play multiple years in the NBA. And they just, you know, having to, this is the weirdness of the year, I think, is they've just not really been able to kind of put it together. But still, like, if you're at home, you shouldn't get boat raced the way that they got boat raced. No, final score is 109-86. But where I was kind of starting with this is everyone is, and rightfully so, should be concerned about Sharif Cooper, who's ironically listed at 6'1" on KenPom. He is not that tall. The guy that I've been really impressed with this year is Alan Flanagan. I was sort of kind of going back and forth between him and Devin Cambridge as like the guy who might be able to be the breakout wing for Bruce Pearl's team this year. I think on the preview, I kind of hemmed and hawed a little bit and said, it could be one of these other guys. But I actually used Cambridge because he played slightly more minutes. But man, like Flanagan has just been terrific this year. He's got an offensive rating over like 110. I think it's 111.6. He's shooting 39% from three, 80% from the line. Great shooting numbers. He's a high-level athlete. And I'm really, really interested to see what Missouri's defensive game plan is going to be, because I don't think, like, I don't necessarily think that you go overboard and try to change up a bunch of things that you do well. But Auburn is a team who I still think that there are a lot of flaws, and I still think that they don't particularly love defending. So it is one of those things where Missouri should be able to generate plenty of points. But the big thing for me is are they going to be able to convince like these Auburn players who play with just supreme confidence into taking more bad shots than they've been taking in the last few games. So it'll be interesting, and I don't know that I'm like supremely confident that Missouri will win, but I do think that the way that Missouri defends will present a little bit of a conundrum for, you know, more than just Sharif Cooper and Alan Flanagan, just to see kind of how they match up.
I think when I've watched them, aside from Cooper's immense skill, what he does is that he pushes guys into the right spots in the lineup. I mean, Justin Powell was doing all he could to sort of operate as their point guard. He had a 31% assist rate, but against a 23% turnover rate. He was drawing 4.5 fouls per 40 minutes. Like, not bad. But Powell's more of an off guard, and he can shoot the ball really well. So if if Powell's healthy, you know, and you can push him into kind of a secondary creator role, and he's still a guy who can knock down 40%+ of his shots, and now you've got Flanagan out there. Now you've got legit floor spacers who are able to play off of, you know, Thor and Cooper, you know, if they want to get into ball screen situations, and all those guys can get out and run the floor. So I think what they've been able to do is just reorient their lineups in a way that make a little bit more sense. Not that, you know, it didn't before, but now guys are kind of clicked into the appropriate role. You know, this is a team now that over the last five games is playing at like a top 40 or 50 level in terms of offensive efficiency. Yeah, they're still a little bit porous defensively, but they're also really, really young. So, you know, when I went back and, you know, was researching them, you know, just in terms of efficiency, they're really similar to Bruce's group that went 18-14 and 7-11 back in 2017. Like, yeah, they've got some issues and they've got some flaws and they're going to have to sort through mistakes, but they're still potent enough. They've still got enough talent on this roster that fits what Bruce wants to do to put you, to put you in a barrel. And I think that's the risk that they're going to run. No, that's the risk that exists tomorrow night. I want to be very clear. I'm not concerned. I'm intrigued by what we're going to see because, like, in terms of half-court offense, this Auburn team is pretty close to what it was a year ago. It's not as good in transition, but, you know, they've got a guy now who kind of fits their mold. So, I'm not saying that I think Missouri's you know, you should be, you know, chewing off your nails here. I just think it's an intriguing matchup where
it's got some potential to be like a really fun game. I'm sure, like, as a like neutral college basketball observer, it would be like a really fun matchup that a lot of people want to tune in for. I think there's some excitement around, the potential of a point guard matchup and all kind of stuff. But it's like I said, like, I'm really, really interested to see what Missouri does defensively. You know, one of the things that, we know is like the Tigers tend to kind of come into these games like pretty well prepared. Sometimes they don't get out of the gates great, you know, but the plan overall is typically, you know, pretty solid. And I'm kind of curious to sort of see what it is that they do, like, within like the first 3-4 minutes of play, just to try to get into like the mind and the play of Cooper and Flanagan, two guys that I really think make that offense go. There isn't a whole lot outside of those two guys that scare me. I think, you know, Jamal Johnson's a guy who's capable of making a three here and there. Jalen Williams, I think, is a guy that is capable of scoring, but he's certainly, he's not the most athletic guy. I think he's a fairly easy guy to match up with. You just got to make him take tough shots. JT Thor is just like a freak of an athlete. But a lot of these guys are young. And I think this is a game where you kind of hope that Missouri comes out with a good game plan. They're able to sort of wrestle a lead early. They're able to frustrate some of Auburn's younger guys earlier. And you're able to just sort of prevent big runs. And I think, like, those three things right there will get you, I don't want to say an easy win, but a win where you're not sweating it out in, like, the last 2 or 3 minutes.
And you can't quantify this in the numbers, but the fact that Auburn Arena won't be packed to the rafters and won't be a loud bandbox is can't be understated. Because I think, at least in the past couple trips, once Auburn hit its first big run, it was just a landslide crashing down on this team. Missouri didn't have a third ball handler like it does now, Drew Buggs. It didn't have the experience that it does now. And once Auburn got the pace to where it wanted, it had good enough and it had enough veteran experience and enough quality guards to just eat MU alive. And there was no let up and the building would get loud and the momentum would start rolling. I don't think that's going to be the case this year. It's a little bit younger of an Auburn team. They won't have that crowd to feed off of. Like I said, they're not as potent in transition as they have been in the past. That's a good thing for Missouri. And additionally, as somebody would also point out, Missouri's more willing to run this year. So I just think the preconditions are probably better for Missouri here. But it's still going to be a really, really fascinating matchup to see. Definitely more intriguing than TCU coming to town on Saturday.
Well, yeah, so as of right now,
assuming this thing still happens.
Yeah, like TCU is currently on a program pause. They are slated to play on Thursday. And so this is the time of year where you get the Big 12 SEC Challenge. The Big 12 SEC Challenge has several matchups that are mostly uninteresting. I actually thought it was interesting because, like, I did the I looked at the current standings and I said, well, Matt, what if we just waited, you know, everybody kind of knew whether you're going to play home or road, and then they just match teams up like the week of. We've seen in COVID that you can be way more flexible in your scheduling. So currently we have Alabama is playing Oklahoma, Missouri is playing TCU, Florida gets West Virginia, LSU gets Texas Tech, Tennessee gets Kansas. Kentucky gets Texas. Did I say that right? Tennessee gets Kansas. Kentucky gets Texas. Arkansas gets Oklahoma State. Auburn gets Baylor.
Certainly better than the TCU matchup that Missouri gets handed right now. Just
so interesting that Missouri plays Auburn, and then Auburn has to go play, you know, Baylor. Anyone who isn't following the rest of college basketball, you know, there are two truly great teams in the NCAA this year, and it's Baylor and Gonzaga. They were supposed to play. I think Baylor, what was it, had to go on pause, or and they had to cancel the game, couldn't reschedule it, which really, really sucked. That would have been an amazing game. But so if you basically just reorganized, how much more interesting would a Baylor-Alabama matchup be right now?
Better than what's on the docket right now.
Or Texas-Missouri.
I mean, who doesn't want to hear the DeLoss Dodds quote once again? So,
well, so, like, this is really, like, an example of why it would be nice if they could find a way to be a little bit more flexible in the scheduling, just to, you know, really get some terrific matchups. Because I really find overall the entire slate to be sort of uninteresting. You know, part of that is, you know, Kentucky is down. You know, Tennessee isn't playing great right now, but
Florida doesn't have Keontae Johnson available.
Yeah, Florida doesn't have Keontae Johnson. They've sort of been kind of up and down.
LSU doesn't believe in playing hard at one end of the floor. I don't know if matchups influence that or not. I mean, that'll motivate LSU to play defense or not. But, you look at this TCU team, and, like, outside of RJ Nimbard being a good player on a bland roster, I don't know what there is to really get excited about. You know, we were talking about it before the pod, like, TCU's always been a tough job. And, you know, Jamie Dixon, I think, had kind of gotten stale at Pitt, and, you know, he was certainly, you know, an upgrade over who TCU's had there in the past, but it's just such a tough job, and Jamie, you know, had kind of, I think, plateaued a bit and came in and, you know, had a good first 2 years, and the last four have just been a steady regression. I think they went from, like, 26th in KenPom to the point where they're, you know, fighting to stay in the top 100 right now. He's had one 500 finish in Fort Worth, and that was when they made the NCAA tournament and went out in the first round. He's only had two 500 finishes in the last 6 or 7 years in conference play, whether it's the ACC or the Big 12. It's just, you know, TCU is a young team. They've got one good player. They're forecasted to finish 5-11 in the Big 12. They don't have a ton of options. Like, Mike Miles and Kevin Samuels are okay players, but, like, if you look at just TCU's roster and you just even do a cursory look at their profile, this is a game you should win if you're a top 15 or top 20 team at home. And there might be some stretches where TCU apply some pressure, but it's not one that I think comes with a bunch of intrigue. And, you know, it's just, I would rather they just, you know, TCU backs out and they just try and get LSU rescheduled. So, or put Vandy in there. Vandy's not playing. Just find a way to reschedule one of the postponed SEC games on Saturday.
It is interesting kind of looking at TCU's roster, like how many of these guys were on Mizzou's recruiting radar.
Jaden Lee, I think, was on there.
Yeah, Jaden Lee. PJ Fuller, some people might remember. He was the kid who was on that that same high school team with Michael and Chauncey Porter out of Seattle. Eddie Lampkin was that he's a big post guy. He doesn't really play much, but he was a guy that Missouri had offered and looked like they were sort of pursuing there for a while, but I guess they kind of fell off. He's basically got the same kind of profile as
Jordan Wilmore.
Big body, not super skilled.
And
Charles O'Bannon Jr. actually listed here as Chuck O'Bannon. But for anybody who remembers the mid 90s UCLA teams coached by Jim Herrick, the O'Bannon brothers, Ed and Charles, this is Charles Kidd. I think I made a note in my piece today about how some of these like names are starting to pop up of like guys that you remember watching, Larry Hughes Jr. and Kellen Thames. Obviously, Larry Hughes Jr. is Larry Hughes Jr. or Larry Hughes' son. And I was joking with you the other day because I think Kellen is Kelly Thames' son, obviously. Kellen got an offer to SLU. And I was kind of laughing because we both know that, I mean, Mizzou is recruiting Larry Hughes Jr., you know, quite a bit. They haven't extended an offer, but he's certainly on the radar. And I was kind of laughing, like, wouldn't it be funny if, like, Larry Hughes Jr. ended up at Mizzou and Kellen Thames ended up at SLU? Just reversing.
Yeah, well, he'd be there with Corey Tate and just to complete the kind of trade-off that's happened there.
Yeah, like mid-90s Mizzou being resurrected at the Chaffetz Arena. Anyway, like I just kind of thought that was interesting as there are like multiple guys that, like Missouri did offer Charles O'Bannon. I want to say, so he's a transfer. He originally went to USC out of the LA area. So he would have been what, class of 17? So I think actually it was probably Kim Anderson and his staff that offered him. I think he would have been signed by the time Konzo Martin was hired, but still a guy that Mizzou offered a scholarship to, and Chuck decided to play it out at USC instead for a little while anyway.
Yeah, I guess it's Missouri is an 81% favorite to win that one at home. I think they should. TCU is also in a bit of a funk. They've lost three in a row. They got to go. Assuming they're out of COVID protocol, they get to go to Lawrence because that's what you want to see right now is an upset Kansas team at home. And then you got to come to Columbia after that. Feels like they're kind of at a tipping point there. They'll be coming off a COVID break, having lost three in a row, and you get two top 20 teams. If like I said earlier, if you're good and you are a team that's aspiring for a protected seat, that's a game you win and you don't particularly sweat through it. So this week.
Sorry, I'm just looking at some of the recent scores.
Yeah, it's
ugly.
Yeah.
Maybe they went on COVID pause to just sort of like quit playing for a while. Yeah, like, we need to stop. This is bad.
They've been getting the crap kicked out of them for the 2 weeks before they went on pause, and then they get to come out of pause to a pissed off Kansas and a Missouri that's feeling pretty good right now. It's. Like I said, this game holds little intrigue for me, knowing my luck, I've jinxed this program and they will lose to TCU on Saturday. But, there's just no intrigue here for me at all in what they do to TCU. It's a game you have to get through healthy to ensure that you can stay on track and stay, you know, in the mix for prime SEC seeding position. That's what we're in now. We're getting close to February where you just have to grind through the weeks and try and get results.
So TCU hasn't played since the 12th. It's almost 2 weeks ago. That game they lost on the road to Oklahoma by 36 points. Game before that, they got throttled at home by Baylor, because that's what Baylor does to everybody. They also got throttled at home by Kansas, and really, like, KU's a good basketball team, but they're not like what we're kind of used to seeing Kansas under Bill Self be. They've got some flaws. I mean, I think he's kind of struggled to land, you know, truly elite talent with some of the NCAA stuff hanging over the program. And so he's turned to more developmental prospects, and I think he's always kind of done well, but he just hasn't really had a guy who's, you know, taken off. And I think that's one of the reasons why they've kind of been held back. I don't really need to spend a whole lot of time on Kansas, but yeah, so I mean, losing by 30 points to a good Kansas team is not a great sign. I'm kind of surprised, because one of the things that Jamie Dixon has always sort of been known as is a good defensive, you know, coach. I think a lot of his teams at Pitt were always really good defensively. That's sort of the thing that they did very early on in his tenure at TCU to sort of, you know, buck the trend there a few years. But the defense has sort of fallen off too.
Yeah, and they're young. They're really, really young. You know, I think the only returning true starter is Nimbard. And then it's like five other underclassmen in the rotation. So, young team that's, you know, taking some lumps right now, you should win that game at home. But it get out of this week at 2-0. And then the schedule kind of, you know, still, I don't know if it softens, because Kentucky has shown some fight. But, you know, next week is really one that I think is going to be interesting, because they get Kentucky coming in, and we'll see if Kentucky can put together another good week. And, you know, I'm looking who the Wildcats have.
They've got Alabama this week.
They've got Alabama and Texas. So if a good week, maybe Kentucky comes in with a renewed sense of a fight, you know, a new outlook, a new lease on life, and makes that a tough test for Missouri. Or, you know, do they get flattened this week? You know, they got to go to Tuscaloosa, and, you know, does Texas come in and sort of take the wind out of their sails? And they've got to come to Columbia. And then there's obviously, you know, next Saturday, Alabama comes in. And if the Tide get through this week unscathed, that's going to be a big, big matchup. So, again, take care of business this week. Move on to some consequential matchups next week, and see if you can really lock up at least one or two more quad one wins. I think that's the opportunity in front of Missouri right now, is if they've got five quad one wins, as everyone knows. I think if you get to six or seven, you might as well just, there's close to a lock, because I think you can be going into the final month of the final month of the season. And with the way the back end of the schedule sets up for them, then I think you're talking about, you know, I've been resident to talk about the stakes, and, you know, is Missouri going to insert itself in the league race? If they have a good 2 weeks here, I think that really changes the tone and tenor of the conversation we're having. So, but they got to get through this week without stubbing their toe.
Yeah, I'm interested. You know, obviously you and I were both pretty high on Alabama coming into the year. I don't know. I did not envision them being as good as they've been. I mean, hot shooting will help that. But they do have an interesting couple weeks coming up, where I think, so if Alabama gets out of the next 2 weeks without losing, like, you're not catching Alabama for a league title. So they have Kentucky at home. They should win that game. On the road at Oklahoma. Oklahoma's, you know, they can score the ball. So that could be a game that could sneak up on the Tide. Then they get LSU, who has proven that they're not interested in defending. I don't see Alabama losing that. And then Missouri. So obviously we'll have some time to talk about the Missouri-Alabama matchup next week. But yeah, if Missouri gets through this week by beating Auburn and beating TCU, I think that's really going to set up that next week as being a marquee week for the Tigers. And again, like, Alabama, like, I'm convinced that they are the best team in the SEC at this point. They are playing with so much confidence. But all it takes is one kind of okay shooting night, not good shooting night. You know, and the way that they play, they shoot so many threes. If you can figure out how to attack them offensively and score points, you can put real pressure on them.
This becomes kind of a fulcrum week because Kentucky's about ready to go into a stretch where they play the number 10, number 8, number 32, 18, and 39 teams in KenPom in its next five games. They actually got not a bad entry into SEC play. It was a pretty balanced early schedule. This was always going to be kind of the bumpier stretch for them. So a bad 2 weeks for Kentucky, you know, not that I don't think anyone's expecting Kentucky to, you know, win the league at this point, but you can really sort of take them out of the equation for a top four bid if they have a good, if they have a poor couple of weeks here. You know, Tennessee's in a position where they've got to, you know, they get Mississippi State tomorrow night. They do get Kansas, but then they get Mississippi and Kentucky. You know, these next 2 weeks feels like where you're going to start to see Missouri and Tennessee try and close the gap a bit on Alabama and really try and make that final push. And maybe LSU comes along. You know, I'm not sure. LSU's at 5-3, but they get Texas A&M, and then they hit a rough stretch. So it feels like we're about, like you said, this could be a stretch where if Alabama keeps eating souls, they just put people in the rearview mirror. They're 10-11-0, and you're not going to catch them. But this feels like one of those opportunities if you're in that chase pack to really sort of, you know, make this a cluster again. Or is Alabama just going to, you know, break out from the field right now? So, again, got to take care of business, but we're starting to get to some consequential games as we come out of January.
Yeah. It should set up well for a pretty exciting next few weeks. You and I will be back next week to review the Auburn game, as well as, I guess we didn't really talk much about the South Carolina game, other than a nice little mention that they pretty much did to Tennessee what they did to South Carolina, which is a nice little thing. If Missouri wants to continue these games where they just start out and get out to like a 10-point lead within the first few minutes, like, I am all about that.
Yeah,
I would much rather try to keep a lead than to, you know, wrestle with another team or to, I guess play from behind or something like that. I like that. Come out hot. Let's just put a team away early.
Yeah, makes for a less stressful viewing and easier study halls to write for you. So.
You have anything else you want to get to before we get out of here?
No, I think we've covered it all. And hopefully this week is pretty bland, or at least that's what I think Missouri fans are hoping for. That's pretty bland.
So we will be back next week. I honestly have no idea if Before the Box Score is going to show up this week. There is some stuff to talk about. I guess Missouri hired their defensive coordinator and a new defensive line coach. I guess those are positive things. They're paying them a lot of money, Matt. I don't know if you noticed that. $2.4 million over 2 years.
I mean, finally broke the $1 million mark on the coordinator rates. About time we started acting like an SEC program, paying our coordinators north of $1 million. Cheapskates,
yeah.
Before that, utter cheapskates.
So yeah, you'll have more football centric thoughts on those things soon. But yeah, we will be back next week. Send all your good vibes and energy to Arturo to get him through kind of the next couple weeks. We can get this thing kicked, and I can get my dog back, man. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I got two of them.
All right, everybody. So we'll be back next week. And until then, thanks for joining us.